The worst of sleeping out of doors is that you wake up so dreadfully early, and when you wake, you have to get up because the ground is so hard that you're uncomfortable. And it makes matters worse if there's nothing but apples for breakfast, and you've had nothing but apples for supper the night before. When Lucy had said,
"What a glorious morning,"
there didn't seem to be anything else nice to be said. Edmund said what everyone was really feeling.
"We've simply got to get out of here."
"Now that we know this is Caer Paravel, it shouldn't be too difficult to find our way into the rest of Narnia. You'll remember that the sea is to the east and the country to the west."
"Yes."
"Are you certain, Peter? Mm-hmm. Won't it have changed in the same way that Caer Paravel has changed?"
"Castles and trees may change, Lucy, but surely the land itself hasn't. Let's follow the stream further into Narnia."
"Come on.
Come on."
So they drank from the castle well and splashed water on their faces and followed the stream. After a few hours, they came upon a surprise.
"Oh, bother, it's a beach. We've reached the sea."
"Did we go the wrong way?"
"We must have, though I can't imagine how."
"We came the right way."
"How? This is the sea."
"But it isn't. Look over that way.
What?
Don't you see it? Another shore. With woods."
"Oh, is that an island?"
"I don't think so. You know how you said that the land doesn't change?"
"Yes."
"It does change. Caer Paravel was a peninsula, jolly nearly an island by itself.
Oh.
I'll wager that since our time, somebody has dug a channel between Caer Paravel and the mainland of Narnia."
"Oh, we'll have to swim."
"It would be all right for Susan. She's won all the prizes for swimming at school. But I don't know about the rest of us."
"Anyway, there may be currents. Father says it's never wise to swim in a place that you don't know."
"But Peter, I know I can't swim very well at home, but couldn't we all swim when we were kings and queens in Narnia? We could ride then too, and do all sorts of things. Don't you think that..."
"But we were sort of grown up then. We reigned for years and years and learned to do things. Now we're back to our proper ages again."
"Oh!"
"What, Edmund?"
"I just worked it out. You know, what we were puzzling about last night. How it was only a year ago since we left Narnia, but everything looks as if it's been hundreds of years."
"Well, what about it?"
"Don't you see? However long we seem to have lived in Narnia, when we got back through the wardrobe, it seemed to have taken no time at all."
"Oh, yes."
"And that means once you're out of Narnia, you have no idea of how Narnian time is going. Why shouldn't hundreds of years have gone past in Narnia while only 1 year has passed for us in England?"
"By Jove, Ed, I believe you've got it."
"Oh."
"In that sense, it really was hundreds of years ago that we lived in Caer Paravel."
"Yes."
"And now we're coming back to Narnia, just as if we were Crusaders or ancient Britons or someone coming back to modern England."
"Yes." "How excited they'll be to see us and..."
"Shh, wait. Look over there."
"What? It's a rowboat. Shall we signal for help?"
"Yes."
"No. Wait. Those are soldiers in it."
"How do you know that?"
"See their steel caps and chainmail."
"Oh, yes."
"Quickly. Back into the wood. We'll watch them until we can tell whether they're friends or foes."
"Oh, come on, hurry up."
"Quick."
A boat came round the mainland a little to their right, just beyond the point they all felt sure must be the mouth of the river. When it had cleared the point, it turned and began coming along the channel towards them. There were two soldiers on board, one rowing, the other sitting in the stern and holding a bundle that twitched and moved as if it were alive. Their faces were bearded and hard.
"That'll do.
What about tying a stone to his feet, Corporal?"
"Oh, go on. We don't need that. And we haven't brought one anyway.
Oh, yes.
He'll drown sure enough without a stone, as long as we've tied the cords right."
"Yes.
Dwarves aren't known for their swimming abilities."
"Yes. Especially when they're bound hand and foot."
"Right, right. Right, okay. Take it up.
They're going to drown that poor dwarf. We have to do something."
"Oh, I can."
"Come on, Susan. You can do it too."
There was a decisive twang, and all at once the soldier threw up his arms, dropping the dwarf into the bottom of the boat, and fell over into the water. He floundered away to the far bank and Peter knew that Susan's arrow had struck on his helmet.
Well done, Susan!
Oh, I just hope my aim is as good with the second arrow.
But the second arrow wasn't needed. As soon as he saw his companion fall, the other soldier, with a loud cry, jumped out of the boat on the far side, and he also floundered through the water, apparently just in his depth, and disappeared into the woods of the mainland.
Quick! Catch the boat before she drifts!
Peter and Susan, fully dressed as they were, plunged in, and before the water was up to their shoulders, their hands were on the side of the boat. In a few seconds, they'd hauled it to the bank and lifted the dwarf out.
I've got my pocket knife. I'll try and cut him free.
Edmund cut his bonds with the pocket knife. Like most dwarfs, he was very stocky and deep-chested. He would have been about 3 feet high if he'd been standing up, and an immense beard and whiskers of coarse red hair left little of his face to be seen, except a beak-like nose and twinkling black eyes. When at last the dwarf was free, he sat up, rubbed his arms and legs, and exclaimed,
"Oh, well, whatever they say, you don't feel like ghosts."
Ghosts?
Ghosts or not, you've saved me life and I'm extremely obliged to you.
But why should we be ghosts?
I've been told all my life that these woods along the shore were as full of ghosts as they were of trees. That's what the story is. And that's why when they want to get rid of anyone, they usually bring him down here like they were doing with me and say they'll leave him to the ghosts. But I always wondered if they didn't really drown them or cut their throats. I never quite believed in ghosts. But those two cowards believed all right. They were more frightened of taking me to my death than I was of going.
So that explains why they ran away.
Eh? What's that?
They got away to the mainland.
I wasn't shooting to kill, you know.
Oh, that's not so good. That may mean trouble later on. Unless they hold their tongues for their own sake.
What were they going to drown you for?
Oh, I'm a dangerous criminal, I am. But that's a long story. Meantime, I was wondering if perhaps you were going to ask me to breakfast. You've no idea what an appetite it gives one being executed.
There's only apples.
Better than nothing, but not so good as fresh fish. It looks as if I'll have to ask you to breakfast instead. I saw some fishing tackle in the boat. And anyway, we must take her round to the other side of the island. We don't want anyone from the mainland coming down and seeing her.
Mm-hmm. I ought to have thought of that myself.
After we've caught a few fish and made ourselves a good fire.
We've got firewood up at the castle.
The castle? Beards and bedsteads. So there really is a castle after all.
It's only a ruin.
Then who on earth are... Oh, no matter. Breakfast first. But one thing before we go on. Can you lay your hand on your hearts and tell me I'm really alive? Are you sure I wasn't drowned and we're not all ghosts together?
We're sure.
Then let's see about catching those fish.
Yeah.